From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, June 11th, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Modern Pest Services, committed to offering eco-friendly pest control solutions. Learn more at modernpest.com.
The Maine Center for Disease Control is reporting 30 new cases of COVID-19 today. There are no new deaths for the second straight day. The total number of fatalities remains at 100. 39 more people have recovered, bringing that total to 2,062. Another 3,056 Mainers filed for regular unemployment benefits in the last week. That's down from 11,000 the week before. Another 3,700 Mainers filed claims under the Federal Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program funded by Congress. Those benefits go to freelancers and others who don't qualify for state unemployment benefits. Both numbers are down from last week. Maine's Commissioner of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry says those three sectors have been underserved by the federal pandemic relief programs. Mal Leary has more.
Commissioner Amanda Beal told members of the legislature's Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry Committee that her agency has only received about $3 million in federal funds under the CARES Act, and that the Paycheck Protection Program has not allocated enough for natural resources-based sectors of the economy.
Only 1.2% of all PPP funding in the country has gone to a combined bucket of agriculture, forestry, and fishing sectors. So that's not very much.
The CARES Act sets aside billions of dollars for direct payments to farmers, but Beal says only potato and blueberry crops are part of that program, with little set aside for those crops. Beal also says the feds have not given clear guidance about how funds can be used, and that significant additional federal aid is needed to help Maine farmers weather the recession caused by the pandemic. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And Maine bike sellers are seeing a boom during the spread of the new coronavirus. Many have sold out of particular models and styles. Bike shops were classified as essential when the state issued certain business restrictions earlier this year. And the Press Herald reports sales have been so strong that some businesses are unable to refill stock. Some have reported sales doubling in recent months. Nationwide, bike sales increased 31% in the first 3 months of this year. In weather tonight, skies clearing, becoming drier with lows in the 50s. Tomorrow, partly sunny with clouds increasing in the north and mountains and a chance of showers and thunder late. Around the country right now, governors, mayors, and CEOs are responding to the death of George Floyd and a massive outcry from Black Lives Matter by joining protesters, reviewing police policies, and pledging to make change. But what's being described as the tipping point for the world is not just about police reform, it's about systemic racism. And here in Maine, one of the whitest states in the country, the only two African-American state reps are calling out political leaders for their silence. Susan Sharon has more.
Rachel Talbot Ross of Portland is the first African-American woman to serve in the Maine House of Representatives. She followed in the footsteps of her father, Gerald Talbot, who was the first African-American elected to the Maine legislature. And for the past 2 weeks, since protests erupted over the violent restraint of George Floyd under the knee of a white Minneapolis police officer, Talbot Ross has been dismayed about the voices in Maine that she says have been missing in action.
Governor Mills, Speaker Gideon, President of the Senate Troy Jackson, your silence is a betrayal to the offices that you hold when you continue telling us that you care about all Mainers. Your silence means you're complicit in the horror show that we've seen with our criminal justice system and policing in America.
In an interview Wednesday, Talbot Ross echoed comments she made during a Black Lives Matter protest in Portland last week about political leaders' silence.
Your silence is violence. And unless you come out and say that unequivocally to the public, there is no policy that's going to make this better.
Talbot Ross also warned Democrats and Republicans that if they fail to take notice of the shifting ground, speak out publicly, and work to address racial inequities, they will do so at their political peril.
And if you think you're going to get away with it, we will vote you out.
Talbot Ross and Representative Craig Hickman of Winthrop say they've heard little from their statehouse colleagues over the past 2 weeks. In his fourth term, Hickman is the longest serving African-American in the Maine House.
Back in the day when I was a young activist in the ACT UP movement, our motto was silence equals death. And that means exactly what it sounds like. When we don't speak truth to the kind of power that kills us, what else are we to believe?
On Wednesday, Governor Mills released a statement acknowledging Maine and the nation's troubled history of systemic racism and other disparities, including the findings that Black and African American citizens account for a higher percentage of COVID-19 cases. Mills said she is committed to, quote, defending the lives, integrity, and equality of all our citizens. She also said she has asked Public Safety Commissioner Mike Soschuk to review law enforcement policies, including racial profiling and anti-bias training, and to offer recommendations on whether and how any laws can be strengthened. But Talbot Ross says what's needed is not a piecemeal approach to these issues or a series of policies or bills. It's something deeper.
Unless we go to the root of this and really start to talk about anti-Black racism in this country and in this state, it's not going to shift anything.
You can't turn a blind eye to it, and I don't intend to.
Senate President Troy Jackson says he recognizes he's in a unique position and has a profound responsibility to work with his state house colleagues to broaden their collective understanding of unconscious bias and privilege.
And for me, it's really important that, you know, I do everything I can to try and make a state and a society where Black lives matter and that people do feel safe.
If people want to help, Hickman says, they can join the Black Lives Matter movement, or those in power can let George Floyd be the catalyst for changing the makeup of who's seated around their boardroom tables.
It's time to realize that asking people to take your knee off of my neck can not only be to law enforcement on the street, it has to be to every single person who holds power in every aspect of society.
House Speaker Sarah Gideon, who's running for the U.S. Senate, joined protests in Freeport and Bethel earlier this week. She also released a statement on Wednesday saying action is needed to address police brutality and systemic racism. There is much to be done at both the state and federal level to ensure justice for all, she said. Talbot Ross says one tangible place to start is with a new rule that says no bill can pass in state government unless it goes through a racial impact analysis, similar to a fiscal one, to show that it won't create any additional racial disparities. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Many school districts are now reconsidering the use of school resource officers within school buildings. The number of SROs have steadily increased over the past two decades, partly as a response to school shootings, but many question whether they are effective. Here in Maine, residents in a number of communities are asking districts to reconsider the use of police in schools. Robbie Feinberg has more.
At a Portland school board meeting last week, Victoria Parker read a letter that's been signed by hundreds of fellow parents, students, and community members. Its message, that as protests call for policing reforms, the district should end the use of school resource officers.
We want to stand with our Black and brown youth who are pleading for this, who are out marching in the streets, and they're asking for real change, real systemic, deep-rooted change. And one of the areas we think that it is important and imperative that it happens is within our educational system and within our schools.
The district currently has an arrangement for two officers based at Portland and Deering High Schools.
Students have said that it's not our specific police officers. It's not the ones that are in their school. They're not necessarily bad guys. but they don't want to go to school and see a police officer with a gun walking down their halls because there is a lot of trauma around that.
Last year, a study commissioned by Maine's Juvenile Justice Advisory Group looked at the use of school resource officers across the state. It found that officers performed a lot of different jobs, from school security to daily counseling and relationship building. But the report also found that there was wide variation in how officers are used in schools, with little oversight from the state or local levels. The study also cited figures from the ACLU, which found that, quote, schools with police presence report 3.5 times more arrests than schools without, and that black students are 3 times more likely than white students to be arrested at school. In recent weeks, districts in several major cities, including Minneapolis and Portland, Oregon, have decided to end contracts with their local police departments. In Maine, the effort has spread beyond Portland to Sanford, where 15-year-old Josh Wood launched a petition earlier this month to remove SROs from his town schools and instead invest in more support service positions, such as counselors and psychologists.
Which is why I started this petition locally. It's a campaign that's obviously been going on nationally as well, but we can reallocate our resources somewhere more productive.
The Portland School Board appears likely to take up the issue. School Board Chair Roberto Rodriguez says he and his colleagues have been considering changes to the SRO program for almost a year. And he says while SROs are well-liked by many students in the district, he feels the money could be better spent on social workers, counselors, or on more supports for immigrant students and families.
So we believe, and I strongly believe, that investing money that has a direct effect on those disparities, it's a much better use of our funds than, say, for example, the use of school resource offices.
Another board member, Adam Burke, echoed that position in an interview. But at a meeting on Wednesday, board member Marnie Morioni said she didn't want to rush a vote and would like to hear from students, staff, and other members of the school community before voting on the issue.
In light of all the tragic events that have happened and the national reaction, I personally would not feel comfortable at all in a matter of a week, making a big decision.
Other school leaders in Maine say they haven't heard of similar calls to reconsider SROs in their own districts. In South Portland, Superintendent Ken Cunin says the district's officers play several important roles, such as ensuring school security and building relationships with students and staff. He says the officers don't get involved in routine discipline, but do offer support if kids need help.
And it's something that is a support and a help in our setting, at this point. But we always need to engage in reflection and conversation to make sure it stays there, and also to make sure that we continue to grow restorative practices. And that's where we've invested a lot of time and effort and energy.
In Lewiston, Superintendent Todd Finn says the district is already working on several efforts to improve disparities by adding new staff members focused on social-emotional learning and doing more to connect with families. He views school resource officers as an important part of the district's community-building work, as he says they serve as a mentor and caring adult for many students.
We also run the risk of eliminating education, mentoring, and relationship-building pieces. And we'll eventually create a culture where our kids, these kids, only see police and deputies as law enforcement, which is actually counteractive to what we're actually trying to do.
In Portland, school officials said on Wednesday that they would likely begin discussing the issue next week. And no matter what decision is made on school resource officers, the district plans to spend the next few months looking more broadly at the issue of law enforcement in schools. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. I'm Nora Flaherty.